The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end? And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there. I will see you.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for a public affairs show here at Henry Ford Community College. We are the station making waves, doing things a little bit differently than anybody else in broadcast radio in Detroit. And we're happy to have you with us today on our Christmas show, if you will, 2 days before Christmas. So let's get that theme song going and find out about those local news items and alternative views. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is December 23rd, 2011. If you're listening to our podcast on the internet, sometime after 2 p.m. on the 23rd. And this is what's happening as we see it today. And the opinions expressed here, remember, are not necessarily those of anyone from Henry Ford Community College. We have not been told to say these things this way. And thank you very much for that freedom, Henry Ford Community College. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor here at WHFR-FM, as well as host for the journal show here. And I'm joined again today by my colleague, Dennis Reimars, who is the WHFR news director.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Dennis.
Can you hear me okay?
Can I hear you okay? Yes.
All right.
Okay. We can hear you now, yes.
Well, today is the day that my family celebrates the holiday.
So oh, my gosh. 2 days ahead?
We actually have to because of schedule conflicts. So we'll do that today, and then we'll do more intimate family settings the next couple days.
It's not because you're going out of town or something.
No, absolutely. Well, is Clinton Township out of town?
Yes.
It's about an hour away. Yeah. And I'm doing all the cooking, which is going to be very interesting. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, I hope you have a great holiday celebration today. We're not discriminating here when we're talking a lot about Christmas, because that is a major holiday that a lot of people observe. In fact, I was just mentioning to my daughter this morning, I think it's the day of the year that more businesses are closed.
I would have to say that. I agree. In fact, I heard a couple places staying open for a few hours, and that was definitely the exception.
Of course, this would be a Sunday in this case, but still.
True.
They might even be closing earlier on Saturday night, Christmas Eve in some cases. So
sure.
If you have any shopping to do or even basic food supplies and that, you better do it early.
You know what I found interesting, Jay, is that Monday is actually a legal holiday as well, the 26th.
Well, right. Mail doesn't get delivered. They give them an
banks
extra
aren't
day.
Open, right?
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. City offices are closed, Dearborn Heights.
I want to go on a limb and say that most retail businesses will probably be open, though. Wouldn't you think so?
Yeah.
Just simply
sure.
Because the day after, a lot of sales take
place.
Well,
theoretically, which day would Boxing Day be? In Canada and England, Boxing Day would be Monday.
Monday, yeah.
And that's the day that you, not necessarily return things to the stores for other stuff that you want more or for the refund that you believe you deserve. But it is, in fact, the time you're supposed to take items that you own, maybe gifts you got, but you donate them to the people that need them.
I like that idea.
And it's a great concept. I don't know how well it's working in Canada and England, but that's the idea. And, of course, if there are any tax credits available, then end of the year is the time to take advantage of that, end of the calendar year. So
excellent.
We'll see how that goes. Let's take a look at the Press and Guide and Times Herald from local Dearborn area. And first of all, and this should have been resolved. It may be resolved this week or next week if they're still in session. But there's a deadline that's looming for Dearborn Heights' deficit elimination plan. In other words, to come up with a budget that actually reduces their deficit, which I understand is $5 million something. Although the mayor, Daniel Poletko, over there in Dearborn Heights, has submitted a way that he thinks it can be done, and that came about a month ago, and the city council said, no, we don't think it should be done that way. So they actually have a legal deadline to come up with a plan and submit it to the state so that they're not, like, technically in the red for the next fiscal year. That's exactly the same rule that the city of Detroit has been violating for the last 2 years.
2 years.
It was just reported, just discovered by Andy Dillon, our state treasurer, formerly from Dearborn Heights area, representative there. And for a while, a brief candidate for governor, but on the Democratic ticket. But now he's the treasurer of the state of Michigan, and he's in charge of the investigative financial committee that's looking at Detroit's budget and that may actually recommend that there be an emergency financial manager, if nothing can be done short term. But it seems that they found out the city of Detroit has actually been violating this rule about having a balanced budget for the last couple of years. Apparently they submitted budgets for years before that and were completely unrealistic budgets, completely unreal. They were bound to run over and go take the city further in debt. But since 2010, I know it's, however you look at it, is only 1 year back. Actually about a year and a half, I think, since fiscal year is in the middle, I think. I'm not sure. Well, whatever. Almost 2 years that they've been in violation of that state statute. And I would think that alone may be a reason, or it's certainly one of many, why that emergency financial manager might have to be appointed. On that topic, last week, you know, because we happened to read Jack Lessenberry's editorial comment from the Metro Times, he actually, was it 3 or 4 weeks ago, he said, you know, emergency financial manager may be a good thing. And he said maybe there ought to be somebody like Joe Harris, who was formerly with the city of Detroit, who is now the emergency financial manager in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
That's right.
Well, from the New York Times Magazine this last Sunday, December 18th, 2011, the cover story for New York Times Magazine is all about Benton Harbor. The title of the article, and this was written by a Jonathan Mahler, is "There Anything Wrong with This Economy That a Jack Nicklaus-Designed Golf Course Can't Fix?"
I think that's sarcasm.
That's one of the things, yes, that's one of the things that they actually did. And they've got a picture of this beautiful golf course with artificial lake and river running through it and so on, and resort area. They decided, the emergency financial manager, who was Joe Harris,
right,
decided that the way to save Benton Harbor for the future is to come up with a high-ticket luxury resort that maybe a few people in Benton Harbor could work at in menial, low-wage jobs, okay, in other words, like servants to the rich people.
Groundskeepers.
Sure. Well, whatever you see there. And that this would revitalize the area. And, you know, that Jack Nicklaus designed it. And that supposedly makes it fun to play on, I guess. I don't know. The subtitle for the article is "The Strange Second Life of a Factory Town That Lost Its Factories."
Hmm.
And it's strange, very strange. Now, I should say, and I can't feature all of the comments in here because as the cover article, it must be 5,000 words. I mean, it is long. It is in-depth. They went to Benton Harbor. They investigated. They talked to the mayor, who now has no power.
Right.
The city council members, who have no power. And, in fact, some of them don't even come into work. because there's nothing they can do. One guy, though, he's there 18 hours a day trying to keep up with what Joe Harris is doing.
Oh, yeah.
And except he's being paid no money because they decided not to pay the council people any money. And he's homeless anyway.
Oh, wow.
So some of the times he slept in the city hall out there.
But he needs less money, too, because...
Yeah, well, and of course, Harris has criticized him in this article. Oh, we caught him sleeping. You know, he must have been sleeping. We got him on video. And the guy says, no, I just work very late. And I come in quite early.
Does it criticize Harris?
Yeah, a lot.
You think?
And, and of course, the fact that this is not democracy in action. Mm-hmm. This, well, I know you shook your head, and thank you for agreeing with me. But in fact, I mean, you could say, well, it's representative democracy. We give power up to the governments above us. And if they think it's time for them to come in to help us out, like in a natural disaster or something, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. they will send FEMA in. And that's not always the best answer, but nonetheless, it is nice to have outside help and support, supplies, food, whatever, coming quickly.
To a degree.
If you need that, right. So I think there's definitely times when we sort of want the federal government to get involved. And in this case, though, there's no local feedback from the people. The people have not been helped. They still have a high poverty level, except a few people have got, again, these very low-paying jobs working at the Jack Nicklaus Resort, which ironically is only there to benefit the really rich people that want to play golf.
And if I might add, is seasonal.
Yes. I mean, in Michigan, it certainly is.
It's kind of a big deal.
Although right by my house, I live by the TPC mm-hmm. In Dearborn, which was Jack Nicklaus designed too, by mm-hmm. the way, except they lost the panache of actually being the senior division host for
Senior Open.
Senior Open. Mm-hmm. They don't do that there anymore. I guess they don't like Dearborn for some reason. Dearborn in August, not that bad, you know, in terms of weather. But Benton, but it's still, there's people playing out there when the flurries are coming down.
Sure.
So there's not as many, maybe, but there's still some golfers that, you know.
I've seen the glow-in-the-dark golf
do
balls.
Do it no matter what.
No
yes.
matter what, absolutely.
Yeah, I've never actually seen anybody playing in the dark out there. I don't know if they allow that. But the point is that this is all stuff that it's not really working out that well for any of the people of Benton Harbor, and all those decisions were made with none of their participation, none of their participation at all. But
does this mean that, okay? Does Harris report directly to Snyder, or is he? I mean, does he just
yes.
have complete control?
Yes. No. And, he has complete dictatorial control, and he sends reports obviously to the governor's office.
So this would have to have the governor's blessing. This has to. The ideas well, and.
Yeah, I mean, there's no oversight from any other committee, not from the legislature or whatever. So,
right.
And we have, you know, Pontiac and
Flint,
and missing a few more. I think there's four or five that are under emergency financial management. And how many school districts?
Right.
That's a separate issue.
Sure.
But they've sent a bunch of them in for managing school districts, too, like Detroit is
sure.
already under that kind of manager. In fact, the second manager, I think. Roy Roberts is there now, or was he the one that was just left? I know they made a switch. They had the first emergency financial manager left, and the second one
from
came
GM.
In. Roy Roberts is from GM,
right?
Yeah,
okay.
Mm-hmm. And caused a lot of controversy there. Anyway, so I'm just recommending it to you. You can read it all online. It's from the New York Times Magazine, December 18th, 2011. So if you go to nytimes.com. You can read the story, Jonathan Mahler, M-A-H-L-E-R, about Benton Harbor and the emergency financial manager law that some people have a petition going, and you may see the repeal of that proposal. I mean, the proposal that would repeal the second and very undemocratic emergency financial manager law that was put into effect this last January by our legislature and our governor. That may be on the November 2012 ballot. The way it looks. And I'm not sure if the Snyder recall petition is going to make it on that ballot, too.
I
just don't know about numbers. I've heard that the numbers for the anti-emergency financial manager law are quite good. And mm-hmm. it looks like they'll make their number by the end of this year, which is their deadline. But I'm just saying, you know, we don't get this spin from Lessenberry. And it's a very, very in-depth article where a guy lived out there for couple of months and was talking to everybody involved in Benton Harbor about this. So I think it seems to me the definitive story about what's going on there and the horrors that emergency financial managers can bring about. And it looks like it's going to go that way even more. Pretty soon the whole state of Michigan will be run by the state of Michigan. Every time a local government goes down, they bring in another manager, and they don't have to. There's no time limit. They can just keep appointing managers as long as they want to. I mean, well, the city's doing well. It's making money. Doesn't necessarily mean that's going to influence the decision to give up control. So who knows where that's going to go, but it's definitely an undemocratic trend that is, in effect, destroying local governments and local school boards across the state of Michigan. So that's my opinion, and I just think it's a dangerous thing, and I do applaud the city of Detroit for saying they're going to try to resist it, but they're in such a mess. I mean, in a way, you might say, well, they deserve to be punished. Yeah, but in the long run, if they stay punished, all we're doing is creating luxury golf courses, you know, I don't think that's the right direction for our society as a whole.
I wonder where we'd put the golf course downtown.
Yeah, well.
You know,
there's a few neighborhoods that could be raised.
Sure. But, you know, downtown, the issue isn't so much a golf course as a new Joe Louis Arena, you know, down there. My understanding is the Pistons are going to stay put, even though the team has been sold. But they want to do something new with Joe Louis Arena right around Comerica. And, of course,
they want more luxury boxes.
Absolutely.
For high-ticket sports fans.
Sure. Yes, and, you know, with a new arena, somebody will have naming rights, and that brings in, $1 million a year, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that they're doing to raise money for something just came across my emails here. Of course, I probably can't pull it out. Maybe not. There's a thing called the Amber Alert, folks, and we as WHFR are part of that system, and we get notices by fax and email if there is a child that is missing. And it doesn't come by our emergency alert system as such. It used to, but not anymore because there's so many kids that go missing every day.
That's true. Is this an actual Amber Alert, or is this the because at the last MAB function they had they were very very excited about the Amber Alert and to date at how many kids it had saved.
Yes, it looks like there's it says over 300 children have been safely recovered.
That's right.
So that's across the state throughout, you know, all the stations that do these alerts. And we do the best we can to keep running to our fax machine every 5 minutes. But it's often we get the fax, we find the fax, and then we find the second fax saying the child was found and saved. Because it usually happens within a couple hours.
Absolutely.
Whether or not it's helped by these messages, it can't hurt, of course. But some stations don't run them very much. And we run them as often as we can, but we don't have a large staff that's constantly sitting over the fax machine.
Right.
And you know how many spam faxes we
get. Oh, my gosh. We have one or two good ones for every 10 or 15 spam.
Right. Well, anyway, okay. So they're trying to raise money to get a new Michigan Amber Alert website that would tie into these messages and tie into some new electronic EAS equipment and cap code systems that we're installing here at WHFR, too, because we have to. So they have a benefit fundraising game with the Red Wings versus the Buffalo Sabres on Monday, January 16th at 7:30 p.m. Monday, great night for sports. Mm-hmm. But the tickets for this benefit, $5 from each ticket goes to the Michigan Amber Alert group to redo their website. Tickets are $30 each or $45 each.
Uh-huh.
I guess that's cheap for hockey.
It is.
Because I haven't gone to these events because I understand the top prices are astronomical.
They can be. They can be really high. And come playoff time, it's
more than a Broadway play. So,
which is come playoff time for sure.
About $75 to $100 minimum per seat.
Wicked's $126 a seat.
Wicked. Only $126.
Yeah, only.
Okay.
So I'm not going to get you to take me to a Red Wing game in the near future, am I?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wish them well with the rich people that can afford those tickets at the Red Wings, and maybe you want to consider buying a ticket. You have to get it in advance, and you have to buy it. I don't know if you have to get it in advance, but you can buy it from the Michigan Amber Alert Foundation. Probably just MAB Foundation website, there should be a link. Anyway, we're probably going to be mentioning it more because if you've got the money, it's a nice cause. Although I think, why just $5 a person? Send them the whole $30 or $45 directly to the Amber Alert people. So
right.
We'll see about getting spots on the air when that comes closer. It's a good thing. I'm just, you know, the cost and all that involved is a problem. All right, moving on. I did try to search on the Dearborn Heights website to see what happened at their council meeting last Tuesday. It was just 4 days ago, right? But minutes and agendas, they have a little thing there that takes them 2 weeks to get the minutes up on their website.
Okay.
Oh, that's okay. But the last time they put minutes up on the website was from the end of October.
So not in 2 weeks.
They're obviously a little bit behind.
Sure.
But maybe they, you know, they've cut back on staff and they don't have anyone to maintain their website. So they don't have any news about what they did, what cuts they made. I was thinking our friend Ned Apigian, I could call him, but his show, Dearborn Heights News and Views on WHFR, is coming up at the end of January, the fifth Tuesday in January. There is a fifth Tuesday this January, and so we'll get all the in-depth scoop about what they finally had to cut to save $5.2 million. For some reason,
wow.
Dearborn doesn't have that same sort of deadline, and I'm not clear on why they don't, or maybe they've already submitted everything they needed that was balanced. I don't know. But I know that there's still more money they have to cut, too. And maybe it's not for this year, it's for next year. But they've still got, you know, as you remember, we talked about the millage that was passed in Dearborn, as well as the millage in Dearborn Heights. And both communities still have more money to cut. And Dearborn has, I think it's $8 million. And Dearborn Heights only has $5 million. But Dearborn is not under this deadline. So anyway, we'll see. Also, maybe we can get someone to attend. If you'd like a free lunch, Dennis, look into January 10th. The State of the City address is done at a luncheon in Dearborn Heights.
Okay. Where? Because I might be available.
I'll give you the information.
Okay. If lunch is available. But
we can get a reporter
definitely
in there. Yeah,
attention.
They should be feeding you. What the
sure.
heck?
I mean, look at me. I'll eat.
I'd like to get, obviously, though, Ned Apigian, and whatever it is, the 29th or whatever date the fifth Tuesday is, he'll be here to update us on what was cut. But I think the people of Dearborn Heights would like to know, and maybe it'll be in next week's paper. I went to Press and Guide website. I went to Downriver Times Herald website, They sort of have a website, and nothing about the Tuesday meeting of the Dearborn Heights City Council. Maybe they haven't decided anything yet. Maybe they're still going to meet next week or something.
That's still news, though.
Yeah, it's news. Yeah, I think. And there's no patch.com. I mean, our dearborn.patch.com sometimes covers Dearborn Heights, but the last Dearborn Heights story they covered was back in September. I checked.
Right.
So,
and then, do you remember the story?
They're not under the sort of responsibility to go to Dearborn Heights council meetings.
No. And then I think they do cover Dearborn Heights where it overlaps Dearborn.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of changes in Dearborn, Oxford Lanes, which is on Telegraph just south of Michigan Avenue on the west side of the street, bowling facility here in Dearborn, is going to be closing after 53 years.
Seriously?
Yep.
Interesting.
Dearborn, at one point, they said, had in the story, which I don't have in front of me, it's okay, 8 or 10 active bowling lanes.
Mm-hmm.
We were a big bowling community at one point.
Sure.
Of course, bowling was a lot more popular in the 50s. I remember TV show after TV show of bowlers, even some on every single day, live from bowling alleys in the
really?
Afternoon. Yeah.
Why?
It was just people were watching.
Interesting.
High ratings.
I remember bowling for dollars in like the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. This was in the 50s even, and that was not even cable channel, just
right.
the basic commercial stations that gave overtime for this bowling stuff. So I watched so many balls going down the lanes that I'm still a little bit dizzy after all these years. But nonetheless, Oxford Lanes is closing for whatever reason. I guess it's a decline in business, but they certainly had a good location right there Telegraph.
Yeah. Sure.
But they're the last bowling alley actually in Dearborn, and they're closing. But who's picking them up? This is kind of good. The property has been bought by La Fontaine,
which
Automotive
is right across
Group.
The street.
Yeah, they have many different car brands across the street. Toyota is one, I think Kia and Hyundai.
That's huge, yeah.
And some other stuff. But so they got the Volkswagen franchise for this area.
Interesting.
Very good idea, because Melton Motors has closed. In fact, they've been bought out now, but before they closed, they gave up, for one reason or another, the VW franchise. That was down in Southgate, and then they just had Honda. Well, now someone bought them out, the Melton family, after many, many years, I think was just ready to retire. And so it's a different name, and it's just a Honda dealer still. So they.
So where was the closest Volkswagen?
It was Ralph Thayer in Livonia, which is way the heck
that's been there
northwest
forever.
In Livonia.
Sure.
It's been there for, but it's like 7 Mile Road or something.
Right.
It's not. It's at least a 35-40 minute drive from here. And then there was a VW dealership, which has just been rebuilt and remodernized, but that's Suburban Audio, another auto. Suburban is a large conglomeration of franchised dealerships, mostly out there in Farmington,
okay.
Grand River in Farmington, and they've just completely rebuilt the VW franchise, and so it's huge, but that's about 40 minutes away. And depending on expressway time. So I think this downriver area, I mean, Volkswagen makes some good lower-priced cars that people...
Clean diesel, too.
Could, yes, that wonderful turbo diesel, little diesel. And it'll be good to have that as a new car option in this area. And right there on Telegraph, which is close to Dearborn and a lot of other facilities. For a while... it was Honda, and I think they had VW also. The people that are out on Ford Road, they're just a motorcycle dealership now. It's Rosenau.
Oh, sure. Rosenau Honda.
Yeah, Rosenau had Honda, and they went out of business on the Honda dealership. But I think before that, they even had a VW. That was on Michigan Avenue, about 5 miles west of Telegraph or something. And they couldn't make a go of that. I think it was a location that just wasn't that... didn't have much traffic, even though it was Michigan Avenue. And I know a couple times I tried to buy cars from them, and...
they said no.
Bad experience. Oh. Yeah, they didn't like me, no.
We don't want to sell your car.
No, well, you know, they had certain cars coming in that were a little bit more sporty or had special features, or like Honda had a sports car for a while, and I put a deposit down... I think it was a Prelude. I put a deposit down, and when it came in, they sold it to somebody who paid them retail plus. You know, and I didn't want to pay retail plus. I wanted a deal.
You had the deal. You had the commitment. You put your money down.
That doesn't mean anything to them. Well, they can sell it to anybody they want to. So just because you're like first in line or something doesn't mean they're going to sell it to you.
Interesting. Great way to lose customers.
But I didn't like that sort of ethic, you know.
Or lack of?
I mean, if they said, look, we'll offer it to you first, but it may not be, you know, even retail price. We may, because of all the demand, we may charge you more. They didn't give me a chance.
Right.
They didn't even call me.
Nope.
To give me that option. So there, I hold a grudge.
I don't blame
but
you.
I'm glad that we have a VW dealership going in. I'm not sure when it'll be built or completed. Sometime next year, probably.
That's my kids learned to bowl at Oxford Lanes.
Really?
I'm sure there's a lot of people that have, you know, they went there, their kids did. That's interesting. 53 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, quite a record. Anyway, it's gone now.
When's the final day? Is it closed now?
I think so. It sure looked like it was closed. But
okay.
Maybe not. Where's my papers here? Okay, looking, there's, I think last week at the end, I'm not sure if everybody could listen, because if they're listening to the podcast, I'm not sure it got in. Didn't we talk about the Gateway extension?
We did.
Or I brought it up, and I said, it seems like a boondoggle for just an extra, like, 500 yards, and it's almost $200,000 of city money and another $800,000 of federal government money. That seems like a waste of money for a little extension from Andiamos over to Morley and something.
Brady.
You know, towards the going around the back. They had to build a bridge. They have to make, you know, go over a chasm. And they say, oh, that's going to be a lot safer than having people walk on that sidewalk next to Andiamo, because they might fall off the sidewalk into traffic. Ooh. Anyway, yeah. Well, they might fall off the bridge into the chasm too.
You said something. I'll let you finish, because you did say something interesting when we first learned about this.
Yeah. Well,
regarding bicycles is what I was getting at, because you had made a point that, you know, the money might be better spent.
Well, of course it would. Yeah. Well, now there is the sustainability grant, and there's a segue there. But I wanted to mention, because I think I got into it because of this. No, I guess I didn't. Well, I'll come back to it. We have an ordinance, a new ordinance in Dearborn.
Okay.
About firewood storage.
Interesting.
Firewood storage now. You can't just put that firewood anywhere you want to. No. There's ordinances. They will give you tickets. They will fine you.
They gotta catch me first.
Yeah. So okay, let's because it talks, since we brought up the extension and the federal money for that. you've got it in front of you. Mm-hmm. What about this wonderful sustainability grant that the city of Dearborn has been awarded? It will cost the city nothing, first of all. And it will be giving us, I'll just sum up, giving us guidance on how to design the train station, how to do the landscaping, so that it'll be a sustainability positive outcome. Maybe even they're going to talk about a green roof or something, but certainly they're going to make sure that the rain, when it falls off this area, if there's a lot of parking lots or something, is not going to overflow our rivers or streets or what have you. Give us some details about this.
I want to read this quote if I can, because yeah. Global Green USA's website describes their organization, the organization that will be working on the environmentally friendly and energy efficient concepts for the, they're calling it the TOD, which is the Transit Oriented Development. Anyway, on their website, it says the organization is one that works in partnership with local governments mm-hmm. and other public agencies that are ready to, quote, do sustainability, that are ready to take part in some of these things. And I think that Dearborn definitely qualifies. It says we help these entities create innovative and replicable policies, programs, and procedures so that sustainable practices become standard in the planning, design, construction, operation of the built environment. So basically what they want to do, like you said, they're going to have people come in for 3-day visits over the next 6 months, mm-hmm. and they will be consultants, and they're going to recommend things based on according to the Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design Silver Standards. Are you familiar with the LEEDs, the different standards?
I know of them. I couldn't elucidate any in particular.
Silver is a pretty good standard. if I'm not
mistaken. Well, it's not as good as gold.
Well, gold is the standard, LEED standard that our school, HFCC, is building the new science center.
Yes.
According to the gold standard.
Well, I thought normally that a good architect would already be aware of these things. But apparently the architect for the Dearborn train station, which they already had the plans. They had to get the plans years ago.
Sure.
They didn't take into account the latest energy efficiency sustainability standards. And that's why these people are coming in. Well, they're coming in for free, but I noticed that there was a so-called Dearborn taxpayer who didn't identify himself,
right,
who was railing about this as another way the federal government is wasting money by sending in these people. And all I know is that a good sustainability plan will save us money in the long run, in many ways. But I don't know why the architectural firm wasn't on top of that and wasn't aware of these standards and didn't do the design themselves.
It's interesting because this would be the second case. And we didn't actually break ground and start the process.
No.
But do you remember with the overflow, the sewer overflow, how they got into it? And then, and I don't know how far into it they were, but then they had to change. You're shaking your head. You remember exactly?
Oh, it's just a boondoggle of a mess.
And how much money, extra money did that cost?
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm at least grateful that they found out about things and decided to go in a direction before they actually started the process.
Yeah. Is there actually a quote how much the so-called grant? I didn't see the dollar value for this free thing.
Mm-mm.
Well, mine came from Patrick, too, I guess.
Did it?
So the person who is railing about the taxpayer cost here,
that's interesting. In the comments,
we don't actually know whether it's just like $50 a person to get them to come in or whether it's hundreds of thousands or 5,000, because the story doesn't tell us. So, but this person this morning at 9:08 a.m., who doesn't identify himself, no wonder our federal government is $15 trillion in debt and growing each day by spending money on programs like this. No, it's about wars.
Right.
Not in this country. That's the primary cost. War and violence, sir or madam, as the case may be. Excuse me for being so bold. But, you know, we spend more on war, on military, on personnel, on equipment, than all the other countries in the world put together. How did we get into this position? Are we saving the world from itself? We're not doing a very good job, even in the couple places we decide to invest trillions of dollars. But let's be honest about where the money is going. It's going for wars that, excuse me, we don't need. Wars that, excuse me, were not well thought through at the outset or well researched or well documented. And that's where most of this trillion in debt is coming from, as well as, let's not forget, the banking crisis in 2008. Yes, there was almost well, 700 billion that was talked about, that Bush started, and Obama came in and sort of had to agree to it, and everybody thought it would be good, Republicans and Democrats at the time. Now it seems that there was Freddie and Fannie loans that were sent out for, like, no interest, that it's over $3 or $4 trillion. It was only found out in the last month.
And that's why they're being sued as we speak.
Yeah. I mean, and this is part of that bailout.
Right.
To keep them afloat, they put not $700 billion, if you don't like that. What about the $3 or $4 trillion that came from Freddie and Fannie? And these are government entities, and it was under Bush as well as under Obama that this stuff happened, because Freddie and Fannie are almost autonomous from everybody, from Congress, from government, and by gosh, this is, you know, unconscionable. So this is probably a drop in the bucket, these couple of consultants coming in here.
Four consultants
over 6 months. But and we're one of only eight communities where they're going to be visiting to try to give some advice on these things.
One of eight communities that have the grants that therefore can have them come in. So
right, in a way, it's saying that the money the government gave you, in this case, $28 million for the Dearborn Station, we want to make sure by giving this extra money that it's going to be it's cost effective in the long run. In other words, sustainable.
So
good for the environment and good for reducing cost, operational costs for the long term. So it's great that they're adding that on, because it makes their money even better spent.
So to your question, don't our architects or the planners have sustainability in mind? I think that maybe this is just a good way to go to people that have done it before. We're kind of new to it.
Yeah, I don't know the background of the company, but they were selected by the federal government somehow. Maybe they paid somebody for it. But we would hope they are the best people in the whole country at deciding the you know, how you achieve a better sustainability.
Right.
That maybe even local architects haven't kept up with. I don't know if they have or not, but I would think a local architect, that's the first thing they're going to do constantly. And I talked to the architectural, the head of the architectural program here at Henry Ford Community College, architectural drawing, drafting, planning. And he said, oh, yeah, all of our classes, we haven't changed the titles of the names, but they all incorporate the latest LEED guidelines. Because architects have to know that, because, you know, you're going to be saving, even if it's going to cost a little more up front, if your client agrees to that, it's going to save them tons of money in the long run.
Sure.
And better for the environment, if anybody cares about that.
So, I mean, because this project is monstrous. If they're doing everything, if they're going to incorporate it being a hub for not only train, but also bus and cabs and everything, this is going to be a big deal. So, yeah, I'm glad
that's an essential part of Dearborn. I'm glad it's coming in. So I don't quite agree with the city of Dearborn, or the Dearborn taxpayer, whoever that person is, that put the comment this morning. I do agree that Greenway Trail extension is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
For $1 million total money, $800,000 from the federal government, and they say, "Oh, the money's there, the grant money's there." What? You know, it has nothing to do with sustainability. It may have something to do with safety, but I don't quite go along with that. You know, the sidewalk is 3 feet wide.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that I'd like the curb to not be there, like that sort of rolling place, so that I can ride my bicycle from the trail or to the trail without getting off my bike or going bump down the curb or smashing into it, because that might throw me out in Michigan traffic. So if they just, and they may have already changed that situation, so it's the easy up ramp there for that curb. Once they do that, I don't see why there's a problem. If it's a narrow sidewalk, folks, don't walk five abreast, you know? I mean, come on.
You know, and even better would be to add a couple bike lanes right off of the curb so the people can walk on the sidewalk and the bikes can stay in the street.
I actually think that there's room enough
for
bike lanes on the north side of Andiamo, but they'd have to give up some of their property. I know that deck goes pretty close right to that
river,
so maybe there's no room for that, but they would have thought of it. Okay, moving on. Firewood. Yeah, you know, last week I think we talked about that the little change to the snow emergency rules, and I have stated my opinion for years that we have too many snow emergency rules, and we come and shovel way too soon at 4 inches instead of 10, requiring us to shovel 6 to 8 inches of snow out of the apron of our driveway to get our cars out when there isn't enough snow to stop us on the roads in the first place. So, you know, you want to save money, stop shoveling the roads when it's not really a crisis. Okay, although some people would like it shoveled all the time, no snow there ever, and, you know, well, that you can pay for a special service to come in and help you for that, folks. But no, now we have firewood storage ordinance. Oh, the change was, in addition to all the other ordinances, they used to allow you to park your car on your drive but over the sidewalk for the snow emergency. Because where else are you going to park several cars?
Sure.
You only have a driveway, and maybe your garage is closer to the street. So you know, the second car or the third car, some families have three cars in them, they don't all fit unless they straddle. Maybe they do fit on the driveway. So the city of Dearborn, I know in the past, because my daughter had extra cars and no space really on their driveway, when she was in her former home in Dearborn near Oakwood. And the city said, park it at a school parking lot. Well, the nearest school is a mile and a half away. So during the snow emergency, you've got to drive your car down to the school parking lot and then walk back.
Maybe the plow will give you a ride.
Yeah. And now you can't straddle the sidewalk. And I understand there are rules about the public sidewalk should be accessible by all people, including those that might be in wheelchairs or walking with canes or you know, so whatever mobility they have, that they say that the American Disabilities Act, which is now about 15, almost 20 years old, says you've got to keep those sidewalks open no matter what. And I guess it includes snow emergency times. Of course, I pity the people that are out there in their wheelchairs, even in the cold and wet, even on a cleared sidewalk.
Right.
It's not going to be fun anyway. But now we have a firewood storage ordinance.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
Here it is, just in time for the winter season when we need firewood the most.
Do you have a fireplace indoor?
I do.
Yeah,
yes.
So do we. So we use wood. Absolutely.
Right. The city has created expanded options for residents who want to store firewood on their property. So it's not all bad and restrictive. Expanded options. City Council voted December 12th to add language regulating the storage of firewood to the Fire Prevention and Protection chapter of the city code. Now, I guess there's a bunch of rules there.
Sure.
I'm scared to look at that one. Under the ordinance, firewood can be stored in a rack or structure that is raised only 9 inches off the ground, which is a decrease from the previous 18 inches.
Well, that's half.
So your rack, can you imagine the inspectors coming out with their rulers? And, yeah. Oh, it's 8 inches above the ground. You're going to get a fine for
that. Well, they didn't have 18-inch rulers, so this will make their job that much easier.
That's right. A simple 12-inch ruler.
That's right.
And firewood, it says, doesn't need to be raised at all if the wood pile is located on concrete or pavers. So I've got mine on my concrete, inside my garage.
Same here.
I don't know if that's legal to have it inside.
Well, they're not going to come looking.
Well, not if it's closed. The updated ordinance also allows small quantities of firewood to be stored on front porches from October 1st to April 1st.
Huh.
So your front porch, this provision means a small amount of wood can be handy for residents who want to keep their fireplaces or wood stoves stoked. Restrictions for this provision are, you don't get away scot-free here.
No.
The firewood pile cannot exceed 2 feet high, 3 feet wide, and 2 feet deep, or 10% of the porch area, whichever is smaller. So get out there and calculate the square footage of your porch area, folks.
I'd almost rather take the ticket, so then I'll know.
do you know how much enforcement would cost here? Of course, I understand that there's, and I've met a few, there's volunteers in my neighborhood.
They do.
That go around for no cost. With these rule books in hand, measuring things and harassing you.
Snitches.
And telling you they're going to tell the city.
That's right. We need to give those people something to do.
Well, did I give them permission to come on my property? No. Are they officially part of the city? No. But even if they had people they had to pay, they couldn't afford it.
No, but they'll turn you in just as well. They'll turn you into somebody they do have.
There's always somebody that'll turn you in for being an inch off of something.
Right.
A number of people in my area also get tickets regularly from the city of Dearborn, from the police, because somebody turns them in, because they park with their tires on the curb, sort of. We have like rolling curbs.
Mm-hmm.
We have, they put in some new ones that are not. They're straight up and big time, and you smash into them and... But most of the neighborhood has curbs that are very gentle and have a very slight a raise of only an inch or two. And so it's very hard when you're parking to know if you're a little bit on the curb or whether you're totally on the street.
Really?
Yeah, right.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. You're on the curb. And so, okay, once I got a warning rather than a ticket. But
they do knock on your door, or do they?
No, they just go around and they put like 10,000. I don't know. They put hundreds of these sticky notes on very sticky notes on your car, saying you're on the curb. Next time, you're going to be ticketed. Well, you know, it's not like you're on the sidewalk or your car is lifted up 2 feet. With these rolling curbs, it's really, I don't see it's a big deal that you're an inch or two up the rolling curb, which goes like 6 inches or so before you get to the
grass.
You're
kind of a rebel, though.
Yeah, I am. I don't like, well, I keep thinking about city costs of doing this.
Right, right.
That rules and regulations might make good, rational sense, but how are you going to enforce them? And in many situations, they're not enforceable, so you got to make exceptions, and then some people are going to think it's unfair.
Well, you know, at least these are volunteers, because don't you remember the story, was it last summer or the summer before, where they had they were employing kids to walk up and down the blocks to make sure everybody's grass was 3 inches or lower? Do you remember that?
6 inches or lower.
Was it 6 inches?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is the snow 3 and the grass and
the,
6?
Well, the snow,
they
come in and shovel at about 4 to 6 inches.
Okay.
Somewhere, but and you were supposed to shovel your sidewalk to keep that clear, that even though it's a public sidewalk, it's not cleared by the city, but the regulations say you've got to make sure that sidewalk or you will get a ticket.
And I think it's like they give you basically one day.
Again, we talk about tickets. They don't have enough people to ticket everybody that actually violates the laws, so they only go after the people that are more obviously not following the rules. But there's so many rules.
Yeah. I mean,
it's unbelievable, the small print, even for the snow emergency rules. When they send a little postcard around, you can hardly read the rules. So the firewood pile on the front porch can't impede entry or exit from the house, block porch steps, or be a trip hazard.
Well,
fire officials said the new ordinance was developed with the safety of residents and firefighters in mind, including ensuring that piles of firewood would not prevent an escape from a burning house. Well, thank you very much.
Right.
And I guess just the power of the ordinance that people can come and threaten you at your door, and maybe it'll save your life. Who knows? But it just seems like an unnecessary intrusion here. And I hate to be Tea Party-ish about it, but if you're not smart enough to put the flammable stuff far away from the house and not blocking an entrance or an exit, then, you know, you deserve your own fate. But that's cruel. So, that's cruel, I think.
Just on this subject, we can also note, because of the holidays, garbage pickup will be delayed over the next 2 weeks.
One day.
So if you get my trash is picked up on Monday, now it'll be Tuesday.
That's right. Because you'll get a ticket if it's out there on a day when it's not supposed to be picked up.
It has to be 5:30 or after the previous evening.
The day before.
Isn't that
crazy? Mm-hmm. And you can't keep it there on to the day after, even. Now you get a ticket for that.
Will you for having your garbage cans out there?
Yeah.
Even if they're empty and...
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, I mean, that's the ordinance.
Okay.
It used to be they had this crazy ordinance that you would actually be sent to jail and pay a fine. You'd have a felony crime. The city of Dearborn, in their wisdom, the councilors, about 5 years ago, said, oh, yeah, let's make it a felony crime. They'll really have enforcements on it. And then there's all these people who are seniors and with disabilities and so on, that they have friends or other people help them, but they can't always get there that same day to take the empty container back up. And the city of Dearborn has been helping people. They removed that criminal enforcement provision.
Right. Well,
and now they're also giving help on a situation that they investigate individually to people that just can't even get the barrels out on the same day. And so one of our DJs here at WHFR lives in West Dearborn, and they actually have instructed the trash workers for her property that they will come up to the side backyard where trash barrels are, and they will take them out for her.
Well, see, that's compassion.
And bring them back.
I love it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably no more than 100 people in the whole city of Dearborn that need that.
I mean,
help.
That would get tough doing
but
it
But they
for
sent out inspectors, and they investigated, and they questioned her, and they decided that she needs the help.
Wow.
So,
okay.
So, but call your city. Maybe they can do something too. I mean, that's what a good city government would do besides just passing rules and giving out fines. And I think the city of Dearborn, to the extent of their time and personnel, that they will try to work out these problems if you let them know what they are. Okay. Moving on here in our holiday show. Oh, my goodness. Only 10 minutes to go. We're not getting Jim Hightower in, but he basically, as our listeners might expect, is talking about what a sad Christmas it is for the richest among us.
It's sad for the rich?
Oh, their incomes have come down, yes.
Oh, my heart's breaking.
Yeah. I mean, you know, from 10 million to 9.5 million. It's sad times for the rich. So we don't have to say more than that. He's always very entertaining. You know, he does have a website, folks, if you want to go there and listen to his information directly. It's free. If you go there, you can listen to these same things we often play on Fridays. JimHightower.com. So there.
All right.
Don't have to spend any money on it. All right, moving right along with only 10 minutes to go before, Highway 61 today features a new DJ.
Oh, really?
Yeah, me. I'm sitting in for Joanne today, who's in California. So it'll be just Christmas blues. Oh, my gosh. And then that's for 2 hours. And then Mike Holloway from the Tuesday Blues Show is coming in to do the last part. That'll be a lot of fun. I have Christmas blues you have never heard before. You'll be so blue. I mean, you'll be so
Christmas blues.
Amazed. There's some funny stuff. But none of it is, at least very few are covers of traditional Christmas songs, just happen to be sung by a blues artist. These are uniquely written blues songs. I didn't know there were so many fantastic ones. Okay, anyway, moving on. That's 10 minutes from now. Free valet parking in West Dearborn, a little plan for the next 90 days that you can pull your car to special places, and I hope they have signs up, and leave your car there. Although it's valet parking in it, but it's free, so they will drive your car back to you from some distant lot when you need it. And only certain businesses, though, in West Dearborn sort of participate. There's about 10 or 12, and they're listed in this newspaper article. And so you can't go to just any business or just the whole shopping district. It has to, I don't know, I guess they give you a ticket or something after you go to that business that then makes the valet parking free. Otherwise, you probably have to pay something.
So that means that the businesses are probably offsetting the cost that it would normally cost the consumer.
They are paying the cost of that service back to the city. City is paying for the valet parking.
Sure.
And then these businesses are going to do the payback. And the interesting point is there's only 25 spots that can be used for valet parking. 25.
Huh.
Is that how few people we have shopping in West Dearborn now?
For 25 different vehicles, and that's it?
That's it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. They can't take any more space. And they said, ooh, if it gets filled up, maybe in January we'll add some more spots. Well, excuse me. I don't think I want to go over there. I mean, I would think Bailey's, for example, one of the businesses involved in it, they've got a fairly large indoor facility. Must seat 150 to 200 people. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Somewhere like that for a maximum. And, well, all the people that go to Bailey's cannot use valet parking all at the same time.
Right.
So it's, no, I know people come and go, but throughout the day, you know, somebody comes back and somebody goes. But especially for a big evening, everybody's going to stay 3-4 hours.
Sure.
I think to drink or eat or something. And they're going to be filled up. So it's crazy. It just goes to show, though, number one, how bad business is in West Dearborn. Number two, how these businesses have somewhat concluded, maybe from comments from customers, that they're fed up with this paid parking situation.
Right.
The city's response, well, we'll set up this valet stuff that they'll pay us back
but
for.
But the city's initial response was to raise prices
on
the
parking. They did that.
They did.
Because
they're losing money
all the time on the maintenance of the lots. And, of course, let's not forget they're trying to pay for the two parking structures that they actually don't need because there's not enough people to demand them. Remember, they put up the parking structures because there was going to be a hotel built.
Right.
And the hook was, if the city didn't build the two parking structures, then the development company, Burton Katzman, they wouldn't get the hotel built in between. Well, of course, that was a mistake. You never would build an increase in parking facilities until there's the need for it.
Sure.
And then they got stiffed on the hotel. So the hotel didn't go in. And I don't know where that agreement is, or, you know, the city sued Burton Katzman for noncompliance. They won, but I don't know how it's going to be worked out in dollars or whatever. And to put a hotel in there is just crazy because there's nobody's going to be using that hotel either. Maybe after that train station gets in, we'll need more capacity.
2020.
But, yeah, well. Mm. They're going to start building the train station, though, in next year. Late next year. They have
based
to start
on the grant,
building it.
Don't
I
they
thought
have to
it
finish?
Only would take a year or two after it gets started to be finished. But
right.
Yeah. Maybe it'll take years later to get the traffic up needing that. So we've got these two white elephant as one council person. They're now calling the councilmen the consul persons in, was it Times Herald article, consistently they're calling them consulars.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
No.
I don't want to think of these people as counseling me about anything.
That totally took me off guard, too. No, I was just looking at the headline of the Times Herald.
All due respect, they're my representatives. I counsel them.
Right.
You know, and the other people here, we counsel them. They don't counsel us. They meet as a consul. That doesn't mean they're counselors. I'm sorry, grammarian. Words make a difference.
Sure.
Anyway.
I was just looking at, you were talking about things that cost the city money, and I was, sorry. There's so many different things. There's the bills are adding up.
Yeah, sure. City council meetings, those councilors, they decided to change their meetings to Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. And it goes through trends, you know, and I think it's because of the schedules of the councilors,
sure.
Council persons, that some, oh, we want to meet at 6 o'clock, then we can be out earlier. But then now it looks like later is better. I think they were at 7 o'clock on Mondays or something. Well, now it's Tuesdays, with many exceptions for, like, when there's the Republican primary. That's going to be on a Tuesday in February, and so that's, they're not going to meet then. And so there's all those exceptions. So, but just in case you'd actually try to attend a meeting, in general for 2012, in the city of Dearborn, it's Tuesdays, 7:30 p.m., and then check their website. It may be better than the Dearborn Heights website in terms of information, more updated. Judge Summer still has that award against him. They lost an appeal, but there's still another appeal. So it's still $1.2 million for the cases against him so far. And the last thing we heard was the city of Dearborn is still expected to pay that amount. And they're, of course, protesting that, too. Allen Park Animal Shelter, we mentioned them a couple of weeks ago. They're awaiting a cost analysis for repairs. That was supposed to happen this week. I didn't get to check on that. I don't know if Allen Park has a website that's better than the Dearborn Heights in terms of what they did this week. But we're hoping the animals will get some positive help down there. Pretty bad situation right now. Dearborn Police have gotten a new armored vehicle because God knows we need as many armored vehicles as possible in Dearborn. And it costs us very little, if anything. Federal grant, again. Turns out it's a 1981 Dodge truck that has been upgraded significantly.
I bet.
But formerly used by the U.S. government for some reason.
1981 was a good year for armored vehicles.
I don't know. And so now they've upgraded it, and somebody put in a couple $100,000. And so, just what we need, you know, next disturbance at Fairlane Town Center, we can send in that armored vehicle.
Heck, there could be the problem like they had in Southgate, or at Southland Mall in Taylor, where they had somebody that was just arrested for inciting a riot. 30 people went in there when the stores were really closed.
Well, you know, last year there was a call to the Dearborn Police, and they sent in a SWAT team. I mean, I can only call them that. They were in full garb, you know, with the vest and the hats and the guns and 14,000 grenades hanging from their belts and mace and the automatic weapons.
Do they all come out of a big armored vehicle?
Yes, yes. No, they brought into two armored vehicles, their personnel carriers. I don't know. I guess they were a little bit armored anyway, to drop them off. And then they had a search for this person that just stole something from one store. And so they were going store by store with the guns and the helmets and the, gee whiz, talk about an overreaction, I think. But, you know, you don't want people to steal.
Not shoplifting in Dearborn anymore.
No, jeez, I'd be concerned about it. If you're thinking of shoplifting in Dearborn, think twice.
That's right. They got a new armored vehicle.
Yeah, now we got a new armored vehicle. It'll probably run you down as soon as you come out of the store. Craig Ferrand, we've got to conclude this sort of Christmas edition right before the 25th of this. And Craig Ferrand, editorial opinion, talks that, yes, Dearborn, there is a Santa Claus. And, in fact, the name is the Goodfellows, and they're raising money for local project kids and families. And if you see them around town selling a product or two or donation bucket, give them some money. But he also printed, since he sort of spun off of it for his own comment, the original Virginia editorial. I'd like to close the show today with this. If you haven't heard this, this is from 1897, the New York Sun newspaper. Editorial writer there, editor, I think, Francis Facelis Church, wrote this, and I think it still fits the times and even agrees with quantum mechanics. So there you go. And then what did they know about quantum mechanics in those days? So Virginia wrote to the newspaper saying, is there a Santa Claus? And the newspaper, Mr. Church, wrote back, Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except what they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus, you might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not, but that's no proof that they are not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are unseen and unseeable in this world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest man, nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world there is nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus. Thank God, he lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood. So from us here at WHFR, we wish you a Merry Christmas. Tune in to our winter season celebration shows that we specially recorded that start at 10 p.m. tonight and go all the way through Monday morning at 9 a.m. Have a good, safe holiday from Dennis and I.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
There you go. We all get our words in here somehow. Take care and be careful on the roads and highways out there. Highway 61 is beginning now. WHFR Dearborn.